Welcome to Lynn Cullen Live, talk radio without the static. Email your questions and comments to lynncullenshow@gmail.com. And now your host, Lynn Cullen.
Morning to you. Hello there. I don't know if you heard the first hello. Hello. Good morning. It's a glorious day here in Pittsburgh. It's a Monday as well. 29th, 2022. I almost forgot I was doing the show. I became so engrossed in an article I was reading, and it was published some time ago. And for all I know, you guys have all read it, and so me being all excited about it is going to be not particularly exciting to you. Ho hum. Oh, my God. You mean she just saw this? But good God. I mean, just for the few of you who haven't heard this, because it speaks to something that we all forget about as we live our lives, as we interact with other people who are strangers to us, that we don't know. You know, I mean, obviously, if it's strangers, you don't know them. This is my Monday brain trying to wake up. But if we even bother to think about them, you know, let's say it's a clerk at a store, you're buying something. If you even bother to think about them, they have, you know, what's their life like, which mostly we don't. You make assumptions, I suspect, based on how they look, how they talk, their age, their gender, all this kind of stuff. But so this story is about a woman who works in a Pittsburgh Chick-fil-A. She doesn't wait on customers. She's in the back putting the sandwiches together. She's a hell of a worker. 26 years old. And she's Muslim. She's wearing a full headscarf and, you know, the whole bit. And her name is Nahid. She has lived here in Pittsburgh for just a short time, because before she got here, and this is the part that just blew me away. I shall read, because it's just so unbelievable. Because for 6 years, so when she started when she was a teenager, she was trained by American military personnel in Afghanistan to be part of a top secret tactical group. And what this woman, who's making Chick-fil-A sandwiches for you here in Pittsburgh now, spent years running off Chinook helicopters in the middle of the night with night goggles on, carrying an M4 assault rifle, searching for Taliban and ISIS targets. She personally conducted some 50 midnight raids, and she did it alongside Green Berets, Navy SEALs, Army Rangers. She saw a battle. She saw men die. She killed. And then 6 months ago, just 6 months ago, she was one of the people huddled in that huge belly of a C-17 military cargo plane, flying Afghanistanis who had helped us in Afghanistan out of the country as the Taliban took over. I mean, this is a country where we just read over the weekend that now, despite what they had suggested when they took over, the Taliban saying things would not be like they had been, blah, blah, blah. They have now come out and said quite clearly that women who leave their homes, and they should never leave them unattended by a male family member, but if they do, they must be literally invisible, head to toe. And here's an Afghani unbelievable to train these women. They did 12-mile runs every day, carrying 35 pounds of gear in the scorching heat of Afghanistan, wearing long sleeve shirts and their hijabs. I swear you'd think by now I'd know how to pronounce it. They kicked down doors. They fast roped out of helicopters. All of this. These are women who the Taliban say are not able to leave their homes unless accompanied by a man. And because these women, were an affront to everything the Taliban stood for, especially how they viewed women, they were in grave danger. They would have been killed on sight if found, if captured. So I'm sorry. I was reading this story, still not quite done, but there are a bunch of these women now resettled in cities all over the country. And one remarkable 26-year-old is making Chick-fil-A sandwiches here. For you, baby. Oh, man. Stuff you just don't expect. Talking about stuff you don't expect. The Kentucky Derby. My God, did you see that? I, for some reason, every year, someone who doesn't follow horse racing, if I were to talk about horse racing, I'd talk about how they drug the horses, how it's corrupt, how it's an outrage, these horses die, blah, blah, blah. But the race. Every year, I find myself having to watch. I just tune in when they, bang, go out of the gate. I don't like all the talk. I don't even care. I don't know who's who. There's just something about those races, and because they're so short. So that's what I did Saturday. The Derby. And again, not knowing any of the horses. Unbelievable. I didn't see him. Did you see him? The guy, the announcer, the guy who was doing the race, never said the winning horse's name until he crossed the finish line because he hadn't seen him, because he was just fixated on the two who were in the front. He never saw this unbelievable ride. If you have not seen the aerial video, there's aerial video out there with an arrow pointing down at him, Rich Strike, so that you can follow what this unbelievable animal and his jockey did in the last 50 seconds of that race. Unbelievable. You don't have to be a horse racing fan. You just got to be somebody who appreciates audaciously thinkable Cinderella story. Unbelievable. This is a horse who wasn't even supposed to be in the Derby. Didn't find out till Friday night that somebody else had scratched, and so it could. This is a horse who, well, I'm sure you've read about. Unbelievable. Movies will be made. I had mentioned, I think, a few weeks ago, I don't know if I shared it with you, that I had rewatched a horse racing movie. And now I'm blanking on the horse's name. That just wonderful about, again, a horse that wasn't supposed to win. Wonderful stories. Wonderful. The jockey. I mean, nobody knew this. You know, people who follow horse racing never heard of him, even though he's been racing all his life and he's like in his 30s now. And the jockey is one of the top 10 winners of all jockeys. He's won more races than almost all jockeys that are riding today. The 11th ranked jockey in the nation when it comes to victories. That's where he is. And no one knows him. Why? Because he's winning all these races in little tracks. Ohio, West Virginia, not on the big time circuit, but he wins. He wins. And he wins, and he wins. And he doesn't make much money because those little places don't pay a lot of money. He never won a graded stakes race, which is considered, you know, that's where the big guys ride, until he won the Kentucky Derby this weekend on this colt who nobody thought much of, who had lost races left, right, and center, Rich Strike. Unbelievable race. So even though this guy has won the jockey race after race after race after race, there are 65 other jockeys in the sport that have made more money, even though he's the 11th winningest, because he doesn't make any money doing it. Well, he did now. Ah, I just got to say, what a joy. There is no other reaction except unbridled joy. I'm avoiding the heavy stuff, as I always do, especially on a Monday. You gotta give me a break. Oh, there was another race that happened closer to home for me that I have to tell you about. This one was in my bedroom. And actually, it was the night before the Kentucky Derby. It was Friday night. I was readying myself for bed, and I was about to get in bed, and I noticed my dog was sniffing under the dresser. In a way, you know, you get to know your dog's body language in a way that suggested that something was under there that probably was breathing. It wasn't the sniffing of a dog who, you know, was smelling a bone or a toy lost. It was the sniffing of an animal sniffing another animal. And I thought, oh, no. I'd seen evidence of mice. Not a lot. Little mice here and there and one dead mouse in the last few months in my house. So I thought, oh, God, no, it's a mouse. I got a mouse under my dresser. What am I going to do? What do you do? I don't know what you're supposed to do. This is where women, if you know, guys, you know, this is where a woman says, do something. as if you know what to do. Well, I suppose some of you do, but this is, you know, I'm not going to jump on a chair and start screaming. I mean, I'm the only one here. And I thought, I better just know what the hell's going on. So I sort of pulled my dresser out a little bit from the back to see if I could see. And I couldn't. I didn't see anything. But when I did that, I created a space at the other end that the dog all of a sudden leapt into and out, running in the other direction, coming very close to my feet, was something a lot bigger than a mouse. Oh, I do believe I screamed. I do believe I screamed. And I thought, what was that? What was that? I thought it looked like it wasn't a rat, okay? It was like I thought maybe a babyish, an adolescent groundhog. I thought, what the hell? I didn't know. Rabbit? I don't know. Whatever it was, it went tearing into my bathroom. A dog right on it. Oh, God. Cornered in the shower. Then I know I was screaming. I was screaming, screaming at the dog, get away, get away, get away, trying to get him off that poor rabbit. And I ran and finally backed away enough and the rabbit took off through my bedroom and I ran to get to, I have a door from my bedroom out into the backyard. And I pulled the door open and said, go get out. And instead it went the other, oh my God, I can't begin to tell you. It was chaos. I'm expecting the worst. The dog lost the rabbit as far as I could tell, and I lost the rabbit. I didn't know where it was. After a while, I thought, you know what? Going to bed. I'm tired. I'm going to bed. Granted, my heart rate is up a bit right now, but damn it, I just can't deal with this anymore. Hey, sarah, sarah. I'll leave the door open. Giving the rabbit a shot here. And the dog was quiet. Kept coming over to look at me. And I kept saying, it's okay. And then I started to think, if the dog's not sniffing around, the rabbit must have gotten out. And I went to bed. Amazingly, I actually slept pretty well. The next morning, I get up, Saturday morning, the day of the Kentucky Derby. I got up and walked to open the shades, pull cords, open the shades, and let the gray in. I almost stepped on it. It was lying on its side. No blood. Lying on its side in front of a potted plant must have spent the night there while I lay sleeping with his dead animal and the dog showing no interest in it. So, go figure. If you have follow-up questions like, how did a rabbit get in your bedroom? I think we should reference the aforementioned door, sliding door that I had to the outside, which may have been left open every once in a while. So anyway, that's the other race. There was a rabbit race, which ended badly for the rabbit. And I feel, I mean, you know, it's a full grown rabbit. And that wonderful Rich Strike from way behind, amazing, mind blowing, 80-1 win. All right. Do I still have a caller there, or is he falling asleep? Hello, you there?
Yes.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
Hey, I'll tell you a movement I could get behind instead of banning abortion, banning horse racing.
Okay.
I'm animal cruelty all the way. I don't like it.
Yeah.
I don't like horse racing. I don't like dog racing.
Yeah.
I find it cruel.
Yeah.
Like the circus, I found that cruel. And that I wish they would just get rid of it. Because the horses, I grew up on a farm. We had horses. We used to board them. And horses aren't meant to ride like that. They are not. That is just cruelty is all it is. So whatever. You know, people love it. They love the, you know, they like football and people getting hit in the head. So what do you expect? But what I was going to call about.
That wasn't what you were going to call about? I'm not arguing with you. I did say I if you were to ask me on a, you know, I think, and I watch football too, and I think it's, you know, people are getting hurt in football, animals are getting hurt in the race game, and still, yeah, I watch. I love animals, and I eat them too.
Yeah.
All right.
What I was going to say
so
is,
what'd you really call for?
I talked to a relative that has been in Iraq twice. It was a desert storm. He said, now's the time to send diplomats, negotiate United States or whoever it is, or negotiate. He thinks we're getting to the point where we're stoking the fire, where we're going to back Putin in a corner, and we're going to end up with a more serious problem. He doesn't believe what we're doing is the right approach. He said it was all right at first, but now it's time to get diplomatic and start to negotiate something. We have to start talking peace. He said, you can't keep supplying arms and arms and arms. He said, and then they're going to go on the offense. He said, you're just, and then you back Putin in the corner, and then he starts using nukes. Then he starts using chemicals. And then pretty soon we're drawn into it, into a major conflict. Pretty soon bombs are flying. He said, we are at a dangerous stage where we need to taper off right now. That's what he believes. And that's coming from a veteran. So it's not coming from me. That's coming from a veteran. So he did say all these gung-ho people that sit at home that want to fight a war that they don't have they've never been in, never will be in. He said, why don't they go fucking sign up? That's what he said. He pisses him off to no end. All these people on TV, they're all gung-ho about, we should do more, we should do more. He said, well, sign up. And there was a guy on TV, can't think of his name. He actually
Malcolm
did.
Nance.
Yeah.
Malcolm
So you got to give him credit. He wasn't
talking you do.
Bullshit.
You do.
He took the
He went
walk,
over.
So.
Yeah.
Right, and that's what he said.
Yeah, no, I agree.
But he said, all these people, they're all for this war, but they don't have no skin in it. They never have skin in the game. So it's easy for you to go, oh, they should do this, they should do it. He said, nobody wants to do it, do they?
Okay.
And he was, like I said, he was there over Desert Storm.
Okay,
he was
okay. But, well, he's not alone. He's not alone in thinking that. And the thing with these situations is none of us can see the future, And we don't know if what we're doing now is makes sense or if it is a serious miscalculation that will yield a much broader, deadlier, uglier, and potentially nuclear conflict. Nobody knows. So
but
give peace a chance. Okay. I know. But they've tried. There have been negotiations. There have been efforts by third parties to bring these sides together. The sides were talking at one point earlier. I don't know. It might now be that's a loss of face for Russia, too, to end up having to negotiate. They were supposed to take care of this in 3 days.
Right.
I don't know how Russia, through either diplomatic efforts or through military efforts, doesn't lose face here without going almost nuclear, without just absolutely destroying Ukraine, which it could do. But it ain't going to win because it ain't ever going to win the people. It was an extraordinary miscalculation on Putin's part, just extraordinary. And the West owes him a favor because he has united the European Union, which was fractious. He has united NATO, which was fractious. He has united much of the world against him, and he has shown the world that his much vaunted military might wasn't too good, unless of course he starts using the thousands and thousands of nuclear weapons he has. Yeah. So I don't know, and I don't pretend to know. That's why I'm glad I'm making the decisions. But you're right; we are escalating in terms of our participation. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, we need to come up with some other idea. I hope Biden does.
I don't know. Okay, well, you go sing John Lennon, and I'm moving on. Okay? Give peace a chance, is what I was saying. Yeah. Okay, bye.
Okay, bye.
Bye. Appreciate it. Hang on here. Okay. All right. So too much input. Every once in a while you read something and you think that was it. That's somebody who's distilled it down to a truth. And I'm going to share that truth with you. It was in the Wall Street Journal. Francis Fukuyama, who's a thinker, sometimes comes to the wrong conclusions, but I think he's right about this. And it speaks to the nature of freedom, which is certainly something that Americans have been talking about a lot and bemoaning the loss of, or the seeming loss of. What do you mean? Tell me to wear a mask or tell me to get vaccine. And that's, acting like that was what? Tantamount to, the Holocaust. Which is just mind-boggling. But we have lost our sense of a lot of freedom, no matter what side of the political divide you're on. The freedom to live our lives as we had lived them. The freedom to travel as we traveled. I mean, none of us do it now as we did without realizing that there is a risk of some sort involved. The loss of, how we lived our lives in so many ways. The loss of our innocence. And even more so, the loss of loved ones. So the loss of a sense of national unity, the loss of, my God, it goes on and on. My fear is, as you know, is the actual loss of our democracy. So I read this and I just thought, if everybody could just cool down a little and think this. Here it is. Every year, he writes, every year, hundreds of thousands of people, sometimes millions, leave their poor, violent, or poorly governed countries in search of a better life. I will insert here, as so many of our grandparents, great-grandparents did. Their destination of choice is never China. It's never Russia. Rather, they seek out well-governed, liberal societies where their children will have greater freedom and opportunity. It is they, much more than the complacent inhabitants of liberal societies, who realize that there is indeed an arc of history with justice as its terminus. And I so appreciate it. It is their choices. Where do they still come? Now, I think they might want to rethink where they're coming. Because this is no longer a well-governed or stable country. It is not. But it's still, I guess, better than so many places where people live. And I especially appreciate the understanding that those of us who live in these so-called liberal democracies are placent inhabitants who don't value what we have, who don't understand it, who don't actively work as citizens to retain it, who don't take part governmentally as we are supposed to, who are MIA in our complacency. And it hasn't brought us to a good place. It has allowed the powerful, totally corrupt our government. Hang on. Hey, you Jeopardy fans, because I know we got Jeopardy fans here. Did you see that in, what was that? Was that Friday, too? Man, Friday was a busy day. Sorry, this will only take a second, those of you who aren't into it. It was Double Jeopardy, and the reigning queen, you know, we got one of those long-time winners on now. Matea Roach, her name is. I like her better than a lot of the others we've had. I find her likable and relatable. And she seems very be handling it really, really well. Anyway, so she got a double whatchamahookie, and she bet a bunch of money on it. And the question was this. Let me find it. The question was this. Oh, I can't find the effing question. The question was, you'll have to wait to cross the Forbes Avenue Bridge in this city. It collapsed in 2022, just before a presidential visit about infrastructure. Well. I mean, I'm on it. I'm on it in two ways. I know the answer. What's Pittsburgh? Is the answer. Amazingly, this woman who knows everything didn't know. But the other thing that freaked me out about it is I think of Jeopardy as like, you know, sort of like the Oxford English Dictionary or the Encyclopedia Britannica, you know, that it is, it doesn't make mistakes. But that's a mistake, that question, isn't it? It's not called the Forbes Avenue Bridge. It's not. Forbes Avenue is the street that crosses the bridge, but the bridge is called something none of us knew until it collapsed, the Fern Hollow Bridge, right? So I was a little surprised at that. Just wanted to note, because I'm sure some of you happen to see it as well. Okay, I have this other thing. Oh, no. Oh, no, I have an obituary I got to do today. Obit! 102. Man, and a guy. You know, we were saying, we're finding, you guys are starting to last longer than you used to. Usually these old people are women. 102. Johnny Jones. Johnny Jones. I never heard of him. Incredible life. He, because he's 102, you won't be surprised to know he's a veteran of World War II. He was the first black warrant officer in the Army. And man, he was there at all the biggies. He was there at D-Day. He was there. He landed on the beach in Normandy. Ever see black? Did you know black soldiers? Yeah, were there. Yeah. They were, no pun intended, a minority. But they were there. So he was part of that, the largest amphibious assault in the history of warfare. He was at the Battle of the Bulge. He was almost killed twice. And he comes back. By the way, he was in college when the war started. So his, as was my dad, a lot of these young guys, of course, had their college careers interrupted. And he was enrolled at Southern University and was drafted in 1942. So he gets honorably discharged, of course. And he didn't note it until a little while later, but he was looking at his discharge papers, and damn if the clerk hadn't said he was white. He's not white. He's black. But the white clerk had said he was white. And Johnny Jones always said he thinks that the clerk filling out the papers had assumed he must be white because he didn't think a black person could have performed the tasks that were listed on his report as having performed, that he was a warrant officer, that he was in the Battle of the Bulge, that he was in this and that and the other. And he just assumed, well, I know he looks sort of black, but he must be white. So Johnny Jones thought, okay, so I'm white. I didn't go back to have it corrected. He just remembers laughing, putting it in his pocket. So he went back to Louisiana. And home, Baton Rouge. And he was driving to a medical appointment. To a VA hospital. One of many appointments he had, still had a bunch of shrapnel in his body. And this was to get some shrapnel removed from his neck. And he sees the cop car behind him, lights flashing, pulls over. Well, you're ahead of me here. He was beaten up by the cop. He was knocked down. He was kicked. And it was that incident that made him think, this just isn't right. I was over there risking my life to gain other people their freedom. Where's mine? He went back to college. He finished college. He went on to law school. Got his law degree from Southern University School of Law. 8 days after he gets his law degree, he gets pulled into what was a major case at the time. It was the case that set the template that the civil rights movement would use. He was asked to help the attorneys representing people who had been arrested during a bus boycott in Baton Rouge. Now, this was a bus boycott for the same reasons that other bus boycotts, including the famous one with Rosa Parks that happened 2-3 years later. But this was one of the first. It lasted 8 days. And he got pulled into helping to win it. And when the Montgomery bus boycott happened, the young, charismatic preacher who was leading that boycott, guy whose name most people in the world know, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., he consulted with Johnny Jones about tactics and strategy. He was asked to head the Civil Rights Division of the Department of Justice by then Attorney General Robert F. Kennedy, but he never made it because John F. Kennedy, the president, was assassinated shortly after the appointment, and a new president, LBJ, came in, and that was not his choice. Anyway, Johnny Jones continued to practice law well into his 90s. It was only last year, 77 years after he was grievously wounded during World War II, that he was finally given the Purple Heart. At the age of 101. I'm looking at a picture of him with it. When you live this long, this too can end up in your obit. His 4 children and his 7 siblings all died before him. Johnny A. Jones, Sr., 102, lawyer who challenged the Jim Crow South. Okay, so I'm going to talk about something that I sort of wanted to talk about for easily a month when I first saw the first story. I remember the first story was about it said it happened in Shadyside and that 2 people, a man and a woman, had thrown something into some other guy's yard and said he was, a Russian spy or something. I don't know. It sounded really ridiculous. And that, he had like Trump yard signs, and it just didn't fit into the neighborhood decor. And a picture was taken. I'm sure you saw it, and you probably are way ahead of me again on this one, but I never talked about it, so I have to talk about it. There was a picture of, I think both people are on bikes, at least one of the guy is and the woman, and they're screaming at this house. I don't know. It later turns out, I mean, because eventually this guy called the cops, and the cops actually charged the two people, I forget with what, maybe harassment or just being jerks. And then it turns out the people, the name of the guy was somebody, a name I knew. I don't know him, but he's in the paper a lot. Robert, I think it's Robert Pfaffman, P-F-A-F. He's a, you know, he's out there in lots of, you know, good causes, community oriented, blah, blah, blah. And I thought, whoa, something just didn't seem like it made a lot of sense here. So I think to me, this is a story. It's a story about the people who pride themselves on their tolerance being intolerant themselves. And it happens so often, and there's no self-awareness, I think, going on. Here's a guy who I think sort of thinks of himself as a lover of humanity and a good person. And he's screaming at someone in the neighborhood and because they don't think like he does. And this to me is not tolerant. I mean, I can't imagine anyone would disagree. But of course, the story thickens. Well, here, I have to cut to last week. Last week, I'm walking my dog. And sometimes I walk my dog not in my neighborhood. I'll be somewhere else running an errand. The dog will be with me, and we'll get out and think, hey, let's walk here and stare at these people's yards. And so we did. And I'm walking, and I come upon a yard sign that I thought was hysterical. So I took a picture of it. I'm looking for the picture so I can read the sign to you. You know, it looked like all the signs that you see so often, at least you do in my neighborhood, with the, you know, we believe that all people are human beings, that they, that, you know, women's rights are human rights, Black Lives Matter, you know, all those signs, which I have to say, at some level, I understand people putting them out. On another level, they annoy me. And I don't mean to offend those of you who have one. But on one level, I'm just going to be honest here, they annoy me. Because in and of themselves, they do absolutely nothing. So I, next to nothing. And I do think it's like really clear, you know, sort of virtue signaling is the term. You know, like, I'm a good person and I'm putting this out here so everyone will know I'm a good person. I mean, one of the signs in my neighborhood, that there's a house that has Black Lives Matter sign, and then one of these, you know, we believe everybody's wonderful and this and that, no hate lives here and blah, 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 blah. And it's right next to a house that I know has two Black children living in it. And the house with these Black children living in it, they don't have Black Lives Matter. They, you know, they obviously, I think, they're too busy raising children. I don't know. But I do think it's funny. So I'm walking the dog and I come on this sign and I think it's funny enough. It did make me laugh out loud that I took a picture and I'm going to read it because it looks, if I hadn't stopped to read it, I would have just thought it was one of the signs. But this sign says, we believe that you shouldn't use lawn signs to reduce impossibly complex issues to played out woke slogans. Okay, so when I got to the bottom, I started thinking, oh, okay, so this is coming off of probably, you know, some folks that I would do battle with myself with, you know, played out woke slogans. But I agreed. I agree with it. In part. So I thought it was funny. I take a picture. I go home and I'm trolling around, you know, through my Twitter feed. And I see a story by Ryan Dito, who used to be a regular guest on this show because he's a wonderful reporter for Pittsburgh City Paper, but he's moved on. Now he's a wonderful reporter for the Tribune Review. And Ryan had a story, and I have it here. It's a story about the house and the people and the Russian spy thing. And it turns out the house that the sign was on that I took the picture of was the house of the Russian guy that the tolerant couple in Shadyside were screaming at and harassing. So this, it was too much. I take a picture of that sign, and then I'm looking at Ryan's story, and there's the sign in front of the house. And another sign on the property is a sign of a picture of Donald J. Trump saying, "Miss me yet?" No! That's all I want to say. No! But, so, this brought me up to date. So the guy, yeah, so Rob Fassman and his wife are the ones that are now facing charges. And it says here he's a prominent architect. Now, the guy who owns the house, who has the signs, is a 23-year-old graduate student at Carnegie Mellon. I'm thinking a 23-year-old owns a house on Amberson Avenue? These are million-dollar houses. And sure enough, it says in the article he paid $1.2 million. Who? What 23-year-old pays $1.2 million for a house? What 23-year-old even wants a house that big? Although on Amberson, it's one of the probably smaller houses. I don't know. I'll tell you what 23-year-old. He's the son, and you might know this, but just for anybody who doesn't, he is the son of the richest oligarch in Russia. You hear about the oligarchs? It's the richest oligarch's son. A guy who's tight with Putin. And I think because, first of all, he ain't a spy. He's a graduate student. He's estranged from his father. And he's lived in Shadyside for 5 years. He grew up in Moscow. He came to America as a teenager, I believe with his mom, after his parents divorced. And he's been freaked out because he says, you know, people are harassing him for being Russian, for being who he is. And that is ethnic intimidation. He is conservative. That's why the signs he has are conservative. He likes mocking liberals, which is what that sign that I, as a liberal, thought was funny. And he thinks, you know, he knows he's sitting there amidst a bunch of rich liberals, and he loves pulling their chain. And I, fine, but he believes that this is America. You know, going back to where he likes America. He thinks it's definitely better than Russia. And he thinks he should be able to voice his opinion on his property. He was bothering some people. But the tolerant liberal architect, Fassman, had something on his Facebook page which reads, "Trump and Putin oligarchs are among us. Vladimir Potanin owns Shadyside Real Estate and his son is at CMU! ! I mean, it's an interesting fact that the richest man in Russia actually is Putin, I'm sure. But one of the richest men in Russia has a kid who's living here. But so what? And the kid, the 23-year-old, is quoted in Ryan's article as saying, "My father is not involved here whatsoever. My relationship with him is not people's business. He is not related to anything here. You want to criticize him? Fine. I might join you one day." He really likes Pittsburgh. He says its size and amenities, without having the traffic and congestion associated with larger cities, just perfect. He has visited 45 of the states in America. He loves taking road trips. He says, "I clearly like being here because I am here. It's a city where everything you need can be had without driving for an hour." He said he disagrees with the Russian invasion of Ukraine. He said Putin's targeting of civilians is evil. And then he said this: "If I really was a spy, I probably would have changed my name and not talk with as much a Russian accent," he said. He did mention that because he has now publicly criticized Russia and Putin publicly, he doesn't think he'll ever be returning to Russia anytime soon. And he said that one of the reasons he most likes America is the freedom to express one's views without punishment. I find this story wonderful and fascinating, because it does show that so many on our side of the Great Divide, who parade their tolerance, their self-righteous tolerance around, are intolerant. Most people are intolerant. Let's be honest here. Most of us have prejudices. We do. And the self-righteousness so often evidenced on the left is so extraordinarily off-putting. And here, it's funny. I mean, I have been laughing at this story, laughing ruefully in some respects. Because I'm sure that does this Schaffman have a clue, he and his wife, of how they don't look much different than though that horrifying, awful couple, remember, in St. Louis, who greeted protesters walking by their house with guns, right? We the people are a complicated lot, and all too often extraordinarily lacking in humility and generosity and a willingness to abide others who think or behave differently. Bigotry is bigotry. I'm just saying. All right. Had to do all that. And hey, guys, I didn't really get around to any of the totally horrific things. Like, I didn't mention the word abortion. But Susan's on tomorrow, and something tells me it'll come up. I'll try to tell her to keep her voice modulated. The reason being is I'm wearing a headset, and it just, you know, rattles around in my brain. Now, I don't know about you, but I am going out there into the glorious day that exists, and I'm going to thank God for this day. However you perceive the concept of God. You know, I, as an agnostic, am thanking God for this beautiful day. You have one too, I certainly hope. And I'll be back tomorrow. Bye-bye.
Lynn Cullen Live, Monday through Thursday from 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. and archived at pghcitypaper.com. The opinions expressed on Lynn Cullen Live are those of the host and do not necessarily reflect the viewpoints of Pittsburgh City Paper or its advertisers.